We get things underway this afternoon by welcoming back to the program a talented writer, author of the Cooperstown Casebook. You see his work in Fangraphs as well. He's the creator of the Jaws system, and he knows more about the Baseball Hall of Fame, well, than anybody, any living person, and a lot of the dead people, too. Jay Jaffe joins us. Hey, Jay.
Hey, Rich. Happy New Year.
Thank you. The same to you. Here we are again, but this time around a little different for you, as you get to actually vote for the first time for the Baseball Hall of Fame. But as you pointed out recently on Fangraphs, the good news is you got a ballot. The bad news is it's kind of a dud this year. Can you explain?
Yeah, the main issue with the ballot, first of all, is there were no strong first year candidates that looked like they might get elected. That's after 14 first year candidates getting elected over the last 7 years. This ballot was something of an anomaly in that way. You have to go back to 2012 to find a weaker first year crop. And the second part of it is that the top four holdover candidates, Curt Schilling, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and Omar Vizquel, are all extremely polarizing candidates, and people are not changing their minds very often about them. And, for various reasons, it's just not that much fun to argue about them, given, some of the issues in play.
And you've created, and everybody struggles with this, but you've kind of created a line of demarcation for the PED era, and that involves differentiating between guys who used performance enhancers before there were any rules about it in the league.
Yeah, that's right. I've always found that to be kind of a useful rule of thumb, is that until baseball had testing and penalties in place, it's very tough to go back and apply a retroactive morality to what happened there, because people were doing things without consequence. And so I regard what Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens or Sammy Sosa may have done differently from, let's say, Manny Ramirez, who failed not just one but two tests, knew exactly what was in store for him, and yet still flouted the rules. I can't say this is a perfect solution, and, in some ways, I think, there are people who feel like a guy like Manny, well, he served his time, he's still eligible. Why would you hold that against him now? And I see their point, but this is the line I stuck to when I filled out my ballot. So Manny didn't get a vote, but Bonds and Clemens both did, as did Sosa and Gary Sheffield. Not perfect in everybody's eyes, but that's the way I went with that issue.
And you explained that basically it came down for you to 11 candidates for up to 10 different positions along the way. And one of the people that you've said no to for yourself is Curt Schilling. And you make the case that, yes, he's got the numbers, and this is not about his politics, but it's about the way he might use the platform of being a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I've grown increasingly frustrated with Schilling. I think I was ahead of the curve in saying that Curt Schilling was statistically a qualified Hall of Famer with my Jaws system as early as 2013 when he landed on the ballot. And for the most part, I have included him on my virtual ballots. But his increasingly noxious public persona, I think, has just grown more dangerous. I mean, in 2016, there was that infamous tweet, that advocated the lynching of journalists that he thought was pretty funny. Not funny at all, really. If you're a writer and you've seen journalists under attack, not just in this country but all over the world. And more recently, he compared Dr. Fauci to a Nazi.
Yeah.
Has used his Twitter platform of 280-some thousand followers to just spew election conspiracy nonsense, and I could not justify, giving him a stamp of approval in light of all that. There's a bunch of other things, a lot of other issues, that I have enumerated and in my piece about him. But he just made me sick to my stomach, and I just couldn't look in the mirror and wholeheartedly cast a vote for him. So I left him off my ballot.
We're talking with Jay Jaffe here on Downtown. So Bonds and Clemens make your list, and we've talked with you before about Scott Rolen and why he's deserving of being in there. Let's talk about some of the others and start with Todd Helton. How much of a boost does he get from other voters from Larry Walker?
I think this opens the door for him, and I really do think that people are looking at his numbers in a new light now that Larry Walker has gotten in. Yes, you have to take the numbers from Coors Field with a grain of salt. Yes, hitters invariably put up video game numbers there, and only, you know, solid to good numbers on the road. But if you look at what Helton did, he was one of the best hitters in the league, even after you apply all the park adjustments and adjustments for scoring levels that go into this. And he comes out as one of the top dozen or so first basemen of all time in value by my system. And I think he's polling around 50% so far for the first about 120 ballots that have come in. So he looks like he's taking a big jump this year, and he's not going to get in this time, but I'm hopeful that maybe 2-3 years out that he joins Walker and Cooperstown.
Another guy that made your ballot is Billy Wagner, and like other positions, relievers really shortchanged in the Hall of Fame. And you explained in Fangraphs that you weren't satisfied with the way Jaws handles relievers because of the limited number of innings that they pitch. And so you've used some other ways. Can you explain how you use things like win probability added and context neutral wins to try and get a better handle on relief pitchers?
Yeah, these are tools that are more sensitive to the high leverage situations in which a reliever works. And when I looked at it, Wagner was, I think, sixth in both of those measures. The five guys above him are five of the relievers in the Hall, so he surpasses three of the eight relievers in the Hall. Not quite the middle of the pack, but somewhere in the middle. And you know, this is a guy who only threw 900 or so innings in the majors, but he had the lowest opponent's batting average and the highest strikeout rate of anybody at those thresholds. And, you know, just the sheer dominance. That and the fact that he walked away after posting like a 1.42 ERA with the Braves in his late 30s. Yes, he probably could have pitched a couple more years. You know, maybe he would have been okay. Maybe he would have been something less than okay. But I think I'm not sure how much value that really adds. And so, you know, when I take those numbers, both the advanced stats and the more traditional ones together, I see a guy who really has a case as the best reliever outside the Hall of Fame. And there's only a limited number of them in. So I thought he was worth a spot on my ballot.
There are guys who got into the Hall of Fame largely by accumulating numbers over careers of two decades or more. And the flip side are guys like Andruw Jones, who had a relatively short career, but when they were playing, were among the very best of the game. And in Jones' case, particularly when you factor in his defensive stats, and boy, his numbers in terms of fielding runs are just incredible.
Yeah, Baseball Reference's fielding methodology has him as the best center fielder of all time by about 40 runs. You know, yeah, there's reason to be, I think, at least somewhat skeptical of those numbers. But when you look, you know, around at the other number ones at the position, they're guys like Brooks Robinson and Ozzie Smith and Roberto Clemente at their respective positions. I think it strengthens the notion that these are numbers that at least have something to them. And when you think about Jones, you think about him in front of that Braves trio that's in the Hall of Fame, Greg Maddux, John Smoltz, and Tom Glavine. And of those three, only Smoltz was really a guy who missed a lot of bats. The other two guys and everybody who pitched in front of him needed their defense to get to those balls. And Jones got to him better than anybody else. He was able to play a shallow center field because of his speed and cut off a lot of singles, and then was still able to run down a lot of extra base hits. And that's why he scores so well. And, you know, despite the fact that, yes, his career after age 30 was pretty unremarkable and ended at age 36, I see a guy who was still one of the top dozen center fielders of all time.
Jay, what was the deciding factor or factors in Gary Sheffield earning your vote this time?
Just his offense. His defensive numbers are pretty bad, and so bad that I'm a little skeptical about those, just at the other end of being skeptical about Andruw Jones. But Sheffield is one of the top 30 or 40 hitters in baseball history, and you know, if he had the luxury of the DH instead of spending about two-thirds of his career in the National League, I think he'd score a little bit better on my system. But I loved watching him hit. Certainly, I think a lot of the controversies that he endured and created over the course of his career stemmed from the way he was mishandled early in his career, particularly by the Brewers. And I think we need to be a little bit more forgiving of that than I think some writers are I think race plays a big issue in that, and I think when we look at that through a more objective lens, or at least try to, I think we see that he had some points there in terms of the way he was handled, and so between that and watching him hit, boy, I had a hard time leaving him off before, and I added him to my virtual ballot last year, and I was happy to put him on my first real ballot this year.
From the first-timers this year, Jay, who do you think will make the biggest impact and pick up the greatest number of first-year votes?
Well, I don't think any of them are likely to make much of a dent, but I do think Mark Burley probably has the greatest chance of staying on the ballot. Because he was part of that World Series run in Chicago, I think he probably, and the no hitter and the perfect game. I think those things, they're eye catching in a way that the accomplishments of Tim Hudson and Torrey Hunter, the two other solid first year candidates on this ballot, are not right now. Burley's at 10.7% through the ballots that have been published, where the other two are just below the threshold at 4.9%. So he's the only one of those three that would stay on if those numbers were to hold.
Love your essays on the one-and-done guys. Do you have a personal favorite out of that group?
The one that I really like a lot, Dan Herron. Just a smart, cerebral pitcher. Somebody who comes off, as quite a nice guy on Twitter, self-effacing. I love the fact that he calls his Twitter account "I Throw 88." he had some injuries that really kind of limited his flexibility and his velocity in his later years. But I really liked him. But I have to say, I enjoy writing about these guys who we're never really going to consider them in this context again. Right now, I'm writing about AJ Burnett for tomorrow, and man, that guy drove me crazy when he was in New York. And seeing and how well he fared after, when he went to Pittsburgh and, all the things that were in play, for him and while he was here, I gained a new respect for him. And part of this process is one where I get closure on these careers and get to reconsider even these guys that I once probably, thought were bums. So I'm enjoying writing this. I really enjoyed the LaTroy Hawkins one I put up today. About a guy who's 10th all-time in appearances, yet for a long time I held a grudge because he torpedoed my fantasy team when he was a closer with the Twins.
he did that to all of our fantasy teams somewhere.
Yeah, yes, he did.
Along
yes,
the
he
way.
Did.
It's been such a tough year for the baseball community. So many losses and the Hall of Fame touched by that this year. So many tremendous baseball players who lost their lives. Most recently, and you wrote about him, Nuxi, Phil Niekro, whose numbers only tell part of the story of his remarkable career.
Yeah, he was the king of the knuckleball, and while it took him until age 28 to secure a regular spot in the Braves rotation, he went strong until age 48 and won over 300 games, struck out over 3,000 hitters, one of 10 pitchers to do that, and really helped to further the legacy of the knuckleball by passing on his tips and tricks to Tom Candiotti and R.A. Dickey just really was just a great part of the baseball community. At one point coached an all-women's team in the late 90s called the Colorado Silver Bullets, believing that women had a right to play baseball too, and just somebody who really embraced the return to Cooperstown every year. Really valued the fact that he was part of the Hall of Fame and represented it in, I think, just about the best way possible.
Jay, we couldn't let you go without finding out if you've had any especially good beers lately.
Oh boy, yes, I've had some really good ones from Three's Brewing, my local local favorite craft beer place here. One called Bad Wallpaper and one called Logical Confusion, two hazy New England IPAs, and they also do a black lager that I've really been enjoying, whose name escapes me right now, unfortunately. Here, I'm on the spot, but they do great stuff. And another local brewery that I like a lot is called Torch and Crown. They do an IPA called Almost Favis that I really like.
Follow Jay on Twitter, @Jay_Jaffe. If you haven't read it yet, get your copy of the Cooperstown Casebook and check it out. And, of course, follow Jay's wonderful writing on Fangraphs. Jay, always great to talk with you. Happy New Year again, and thanks so much, as always, for making time for us.
All right. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Rich. Take care.
Jay Jaffe on Downtown.